Dahlia and I used to work together at the PTO when I was the general counsel and Dahlia was a senior counsel in the Office of Enrollment and Discipline. And many of you are probably aware, but we changed the ethics rules somewhat in 2013, and Dahlia was really instrumental in changing those ethics rules and helping us get them correct. So thank you very much, Dahlia. It's been great working with you. Great to be here with you again. And after leaving the USPTO, I became a certified coach and a licensed professional counselor. And one of the things with ethics that I've always thought about is, you know, when Dahlia's going to talk about many of the cases that have been before the Office of Enrollment and Discipline, and you're going to hear about these cases, and one of the things you're going to think about is, I can't believe the patent practitioner or trademark attorney or patent agent did that. You know, I really wonder what they were thinking. And, you know, when you look at the ethics rules, it's very difficult to kind of, you know, on the one hand, memorize all the state bar rules for lawyers and then memorize all the OED rules. So really, what you really got to do is look at behavior and look at what is reasonable behavior. And I think if you look at what's reasonable behavior, about 90% of the time you're going to engage in ethical conduct. And when you look at lawyers as a group, one of the things that really can ruin a legal career faster than anything else is an ethics violation. People can agree or disagree with you on a call you make on the law, but people generally are very unforgiving when there's an ethics violation, whether it's patent law or trademark law or just an ethics violation of any lawyer in any practice area. And when you look at ethics violations and you look at sort of the relationship between behavior and mental health, I think you get a much better picture for why sometimes lawyers as a whole engage or in ethics violations or ethics violations occur. And that's because, for a couple of reasons, lawyers as a whole are a really anxious group. I mean, their lawyers tend to be very stressed out, and there's a couple reasons for that. One is that everyone expects lawyers to be perfect in their advice, and really no one's perfect. I mean, we're human beings, we're perfect and we're imperfect, so we're going to make a mistake, but lawyers are always very, very nervous about making mistakes, especially new lawyers. And the second reason is that lawyers are trained to look for what could go wrong. And if you're always working, trying to figure out what can go wrong, canvassing the situation to see what could happen to screw things up, you're going to be pretty stressed out. And this kind of brings me to the study that was done by the American Bar Association and the Betty Ford Foundation on lawyers and substance abuse and mental health issues. And what that study found in 2016 was that about 21% of lawyers are what they call problem drinkers, 28% of lawyers struggle with some form of depression, 19% struggle with anxiety issues, and 23% have a problem dealing with stress. And that's much higher than the general population. One of the particularly troubling findings was that young lawyers in their first 10 years of practice working at a private law firm experienced the highest rate of drinking and depression. And I'm sure that you can understand, you know, if you're a problem drinker or you're addicted to drugs or you're suffering from depression or anxiety, it's going to be very, very difficult for you to stay on top of your work and to have constant communications with your clients. Someone who's drinking a lot or really overstressed is not seeing the big picture. And I think Dahlia will confirm this, but the number one cause for any ethics violation before the USPTO is failure to properly communicate with a client. Is that right, Dahlia?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah. And if you fail to properly communicate with a client, there's several ethics violations that can occur. One is failure to keep the client informed, which is under Section 11-104. But also, you know, if you're completely stressed, people who are very stressed out just don't behave properly. They don't really use good judgment. They fly off the handle. Dahlia's going to tell you about a couple cases today where practitioners acted inappropriately with patent examiners. And there you're going to run afoul of Rule 11804, which is any conduct which adversely affects the practitioner's ability to practice before the office. So it's important to keep in mind that, you know, lawyers are, as a group, suffer from anxiety issues. They also suffer from substance abuse issues. And these are issues which law firms in the past didn't really look at. But more and more we see law firms engaging in wellness programs. And I think those firms that engage in wellness programs are going to find that the incidence or the risk of an ethics violation is greatly reduced for the reasons I stated. I also want to commend Dahlia and the USPTO for starting their diversion program. Dahlia is going to talk about it in great detail, but the diversion program allows a practitioner who has engaged in an ethics violation to divert or avoid the imposition of a penalty during the period in which they're getting rehabilitated. And that's really important because if someone's livelihood is taken away, for example, if they're excluded from practice before the PTO, they can't earn a livelihood and they can't go and seek mental health counseling. They can't go and seek substance abuse help because they can't afford it.